PM board bombs.
Welcome back to another EM Board Bombs episode. I am so excited to be here today because we have the one, the only. He's pretty rare. He used to be a horse. Now he's a zebra because we don't see him that often. Dr. Iltifat Hussein is back in the flesh.
I'm back. I'm excited.
On a video podcast.
You know, we needed to give Marlene some time too to do her thing.
We do. Come on now. It's wonderful having Marlene on here. I know that our fans are enjoying Marlena. And but Dr. Hussein has to make an appearance every now and then, too.
I like to be in the background, you know, like pulling some of the levers in the background. That's what I like to do.
It's kind of like proof of residence when you have to go visit a country to maintain your citizenship.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you showing up to maintain the fact that you are the co-founder.
I'm the co-host. But I also remotely am doing so much. You know, there's a big burden on my shoulders.
Well, no one cares about behind the scenes kind of things.
I know. I know. They don't. We're not going to get into the whole thing.
No, the mechanics, the podcastology.
People just think we come on here and we just record a pod. They don't understand all the back end stuff that's required. We're not going to get into that. Hey, no, Briggs, I'm just excited to be back.
Yes.
I'm excited about this topic as well.
Yes, me too.
We're going to be doing.
Hey, before we get into this topic, we have to give credit to two things. One, we have to tell people what we are. So we're EM Board Bombs.
Right.
This is Emergency Medicine Board Bombs.
Come on.
I know.
We're,
I know.
Like one of the most popular podcasts in medical world.
I know. I just have to give the intro line. You know.
The
sponsors want it. All those sponsors
countries.
Want it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just so many.
Come for
countries.
The stems.
Stay
for the content. Yeah. Okay. Okay. 15-20 minute episodes. Board prep. Life knowledge. Great. Awesome.
Right.
Hey, shout out to one of our sponsors.
Yes.
Our only sponsor.
Our only sponsor. You know, the funny thing is that we had opportunities to take other sponsorships.
Yes.
And EM News is literally the only one
That's because we have something called values.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And they provide their content for what?
For free.
Yeah, exactly.
So EM News, check it out. It's the number one source for emergency medicine physicians in terms of journal publications. If you're an emergency physician, you get a free subscription to EM News. So just send them an email.
Awesome.
Go to their website, emnews.com. Our podcast is listed on that website. Of course, you can go to emboardbombs.com. Check out all the amazing episodes we have. We have handouts. We have an airway quiz. We have our question bank podcast we'll hint at later, but check all that out. We should honestly be sitting on a beach somewhere. You know, board season is pretty much over, the November boards, at least fall boards. And people should be expecting us to be kicking back the amount of work we did to prepare people for boards.
Yeah. We sit back on the beach.
Well, we loved it.
Yeah. And we don't drink, so we'd be doing virgin martinis. It'd be great.
Hey, why don't you dive into the stem for us here? Because you spend a lot of time on it.
I am. The stem's kind of long. It's kind of...
It's okay.
I hope you find it somewhat hilarious, but I enjoyed it. Anyways.
Good. Let's delve into it.
A 66-year-old female with ESRD on dialysis Monday, Wednesday, Friday presents to your ED with the chief complaint of needing dialysis. She's febrile to 102, heart rate is 95, respiratory rate is 13, pulse ox is 98%, and blood pressure is 160 over 90. She denies cough, congestion, shortness of breath. She reports missing her dialysis session yesterday due to watching the premiere of Catching Fire, a Hunger Games prequel movie that just came out. She's upset that it's not as good as the book, although she also admits that the book itself was not as good as these original books that came out.
I heard it was bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Really? I haven't watched it yet. Don't tell me. I thought the book was decent. Anyways, physical exam reveals a normal pulmonary exam, skin exam, and her AV fistula has a good thrill, and her proprio appears to be present, right? Other than the patient's creatinine and GFR, which are very just not
bad.
Correct, her blood work is reassuring. Her chest x-ray is unremarkable. When you go to reassess her, you notice she's removed her IV, gotten dressed, and is about to walk off. She informs you in a friendly manner that the Tylenol you gave her for her fever and chills that she was experiencing helped, and she already reviewed her MyChart on her phone, and her potassium was okay. You curse Epic's MyChart under your breath for again telling your patient the results before you get a chance to tell them, and you proceed to do which of the following? Is it A, you discharge the patient with instructions to return if she doesn't feel well? B, request nephrology perform emergency dialysis in the ER? C, obtain blood cultures, start the patient on IV vancomycin and admit to the hospital? Or D, obtain a RVP, respiratory viral panel, and discharge her? Hey, Briggs, what's the correct answer?
I'm going to go with the most aggressive one.
Hold on. Hey, we have to talk about something before.
What's that?
Our Rapid Bombs podcast.
Oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah,
Rapid Bombs. How could I forget? 3 to 5 minute episodes, 400 episodes. It's blown up. It's done great. IT season's coming around. But more than just ITE season, if you just want to like learn emergency medicine knowledge, get multiple emails dropped a week to your inbox, custom emails dropped to your inbox with high yield pearls, and just want to be a lifelong learner, sign up for EM Rapid Bombs. Hey, where can they find it?
EMBoardBombs.com. Surprise.
EMBoardBombs.com. Go there, look for an interactive podcast. You'll see it. Sign up. You can sign up right on our website now. It's pretty awesome.
Hey, you know what's even better for ITE prep? We have residency discounts.
Yes, that's true.
Talk to some of your classmates. Get your PD involved. Check it out. Yeah. Residency discounts, man.
If you get a bunch just together, signed up together, we offer discounts as well.
Sure do.
We've got a decent number of residents now. Even residencies in Canada. We actually have a couple Canadian residencies that have gone together in on it and gotten the residency discount. So it's pretty cool.
Every now and then they translate it over to Canadian, but...
Yeah, our Canadian's not that great, but we use Google Translate for that.
We do. It's very helpful.
It is.
Hey, the correct answer here is going to be choice C. Obtain blood culture, start the patient on IV vancomycin, and admit to the hospital. Why is that? Well, there's very obvious things. Let me give you some basic math. You ready? SIRS.
Yes.
Plus dialysis. Equals likely bacteremia.
Yes. Yeah. Like upwards of 20%.
I'm going to start calling it the Blake paradigm. So if you had a benign cause, like a viral infection, such as like COVID or whatever, or a virus, yeah, that's great. But the fact of the matter is they have one abnormal vital sign being a fever. And technically they have two because SIRS criteria is greater than 90. Their heart rate's 95. Right. That is criteria for admission to the hospital.
Yeah, and really, really to dive in even deeper on that, this is like one of those patients that looks great, and it's hilarious because you'll have that 92-year-old female that comes in who looks great but has a fever, is a little bit tacky, and has COVID. And that one, you're like discharging, right?
Of course.
And because you know the cause. But if you didn't know the cause of that patient's, that 90-plus-year-old's like fever and tachycardia, you're admitting that patient. Right. Yes. I mean, you're not sending home like some unknown, you know, fever of unknown
origin.
Careful.
Don't trigger any of our listeners if they did that this week. I'm sure they're going to be okay, by the way.
Yeah. But you are sending them home. No, you are. No. But look, again, to clarify, like the end stage renal disease patient, unless you have, you know, unknown, like if they have COVID and that's what's triggering all this stuff, that's okay to discharge that one. It really is, you know. But if that, you don't know what's going on, like in this case, everything's negative. You don't know what's causing that patient's fever. It's really bacteremia until otherwise proven. Does that make sense, Briggs?
Absolutely.
I think that's really important. It's one of the weirdest things, really, is because we're discharging folks with like SIRS, sepsis with COVID, and we're like, they're going to be fine. But when you don't know.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part, in this current variant. But when you do, and if they look good.
All the caveats come out. Hey, let me do a segue here.
Yeah.
What are we talking about today? That's what I want to know.
I know. Look, we're talking about dialysis emergencies here.
Oh, so hyperkalemia, right? About hyperkalemia.
Please, no. We're not. Look, just. Oh, it's so frustrating.
I know. That's all we're not talking about.
We're not going to talk about hyperkalemia. We're not going to talk about a patient who comes in grossly volume overloaded. We all know what to do for these patients. Give them the right medications for hyperkalemia. We all know that. My gosh. Like, I think first-year med students now learn this. I think they actually learned it for the MCAT. And then give dialysis, you know, for patients who have just gross volume.
The ultimate reset button.
Exactly. So what we're going to focus on again is key dialysis emergencies, some of the complications that are more subtle and that actually require your brain to work. I'm so sorry. I can't help myself. There's just one pro tip about hyperkalemia we do have to talk about. The EKG changes of hyperkalemia reflects alterations in the resting cardiac transmembrane potential. So what that basically means is it depends on the ratio of the intracellular to extracellular potassium, not just the extracellular concentration. So really, don't go based on what the actual just potassium number itself is. You got to get that EKGs. Patients with only mildly elevated serum potassium levels can have marked EKG changes, whereas others with a higher level may have minimal EKG changes. So really treat that EKG, not just the lab values. But if the lab value is like 8, I might just treat it anyways. Just saying, keeping it real. Keeping it real, Briggs.
It's all about that.
Hey, so back to dialysis emergencies pod. Mm-hmm. You know, first, it's important to, you know, when you're managing dialysis patient, why is it important to know dialysis emergencies? Briggs, can you tell me what percentage of your ED visits are from dialysis patients?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah,
a lot. Like 5% of all ED patients in the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a lot.
That's a lot. And to dive into it even more, you're talking about 150 to 250 visits per 100 dialysis patients per year. I mean, there are literally some hospitals that up to 20% of their patients' ED visits are coming dialysis patients, you know, in some centers, mm-hmm. which is just absolutely nuts. So you really need to know how to manage these patients. Right. So when it comes to managing these patients, the history, this is one of those where you need to know the right questions to ask. So, hey, what's your dry weight? The dialysis patient might not know their age, but they're going to know their dry weight. Mm-hmm. They literally know their dry weight.
Unless they don't go to dialysis.
Yeah, but even if they don't go to dialysis, they know their dry weight.
Sure.
So with the recent changes to the length of dialysis, how have the dialysis sessions gone? Has it been harder recently? You know, that can allude to certain types of fistula complications, things like that. What's their blood pressure been during dialysis sessions? How much is being taken off? Maybe not enough was taken off. Maybe it was stopped early. What's their, you know, weight right now? Are they still producing urine? How much urine? I mean, these are some important questions to really think about. But really the dry weight, how much is being taken off? Do they still produce urine? Those are some of the common ones that, you know, you want to really know about your dialysis patients. So right. Let's talk about the biggest thing that causes morbidity and mortality in dialysis patients. We're kind of go backwards here. We're going to talk about, you know, what causes morbidity and mortality, and then focus on, you know, how to look out for those things, how to manage
this.
This
is easy. I already know the answer.
Yeah. What is it?
Obviously, it's hyperkalemia.
Oh my gosh, stop. Just stop. Just stop. Stop. You're triggering me. You were just trying to trigger. You can trigger me this pod by just mentioning hyperkalemia. Mm-hmm. My goal is to not talk about how to manage hyperkalemia on this pod.
Even though you already mentioned how to manage hyperkalemia.
We're trying to come at it from a different angle, okay?
Sure.
Briggs, talk about, you know, what counts
for. So, yeah, not hyperkalemia, but the number one source of mortality in dialysis patients is cardiovascular disease.
Overall,
it's about 30 to 50% of deaths, depending on the study you read, but it's high. Yeah. It's high. It includes, of course, ischemic heart disease, any type of heart failure, any type of cardiac arrest from an arrhythmia or other related issues. Mm-hmm. And the death rates from cardiovascular disease are much higher in dialysis patients, much higher compared to the general population. In fact, they say most, like 50% of patients on dialysis, from one study I read, 50% of them are dead within 10 years, which honestly seems like too far of a time, in my opinion. Yeah. Like 10 years is pretty far out. Yep. Now, the second most common source of mortality is going to be infection. Mm-hmm. This accounts for like 10 to 36%. You don't have to know these percents, just know kind of the order we're going in and the big risk factors. Sepsis is just so much more common in these patients. And infection is the number one cause of hospitalization and death in the first few years on dialysis. Now, of course, the third cause of mortality is going to be withdrawing from dialysis, which makes sense, right? 13 to 25% of these deaths. This is more common in older patients. Most common reason is just the failure to undergo dialysis. It's a stressful process, right? Compared to CRT, dialysis has a lot of fluid shifts. It's difficult to do. Yeah. And in frail older patients, especially those with failure to thrive, those with certain medical complications or vascular access issues, or even just the decision from family or the patient to say, you know what, we're done here. You know, let's just stop with this whole process. That's going to be a reason to withdraw. And of course, the last mortality issue here is going to be cancer-related issues, which is rare, and it's most common for patients that have some type of oncologic history or kidney cancer. So don't really worry about that one. That's kind of the rare bird here. But really the top two that stand out to me are going to be the cardiovascular disease, obviously, and of course the infection, the top two that you need to think about and not dismiss when you see a dialysis patient.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, again, I feel like for coronary vascular disease, we get it, you know, get the troponin, look at EKGs. But infection tends to be like the biggest shock when I talk to residents and med students about it, that they don't seem to even like process that part of it. They always guess the other things first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the fact that it's the leading cause of hospitalization and death within the first few years on dialysis, it tends to be a shock to many. So let's talk about cardiovascular emergencies and dialysis patients. Honestly, it's pretty straightforward. So you alluded to this earlier. Cardiovascular disease mortality is 10 to 30 times higher in dialysis patients. You know, you have coronary artery disease. And, you know, you have to also think, like, for these dialysis patients, what led them to develop dialysis? A lot of it, you know, they're going to have some of those risk factors that are going to lead to coronary vascular disease as well. Their heart failure is often from just hypertension. Yeah. I mean, how many times have you had a dialysis patient show up that has like a normal blood pressure, right? there should be a button in Epic that's like, you know, normal blood pressure and the dialysis blood pressure.
How many times have you had a patient show up with the normal blood pressure?
That's
any patient.
I know. But there's the dialysis blood pressure too, where that diastolic at baseline is just like 120, right?
Pumping away.
There should be like different, you know, when you present a patient, and the blood pressure is normal for this dialysis patient, which is 160 over 90, you know? They're going to have elevated troponins oftentimes. Again, it's a reflection of, you know, LVH and just microvascular disease, but please just don't ignore troponins either. It's not always demand related.
Wall stress.
I know it's a dialysis troponin. Well, I mean, look and compare it to prior troponins, especially in the age of high sensitivity, right? Look and see what their baseline troponins are. And you also shouldn't just reflexively think that, you know, someone having a slightly elevated troponin, it's been like that for the last like 5 years, all of a sudden that is now like an NSTEMI. Compare it to prior.
Right.
For pulmonary edema, if they're coming in just acute pulmonary edema, you know, BiPAP, give the these patients IV nitro, they like it. Think back to our famous episode on SCAPE, right? If you know, you know. It's not flash pulmonary edema, it's SCAPE. And I'm not going to say anything else.
That was such
if
a great know, episode, you by know. The way.
That was
like in the record books, one of the best episodes.
It really was. Oh my gosh. If you know, you know.
With the Chris Nolan shout outs we did. Oh my God.
And it's with that thing's Bane, been referenced so
Bane
many
was,
times.
How many times was Bane referenced?
Gosh, that was amazing. Anyways, we're going to move on. And our hardcore listeners are going to know exactly how to get to that episode. You know what? Hey, drop it in our show notes as well, Briggs, for some of the folks who don't know. So
I love this next one you're about to talk about. I love this. No, I love this because I've had so many teaching moments with this. From unexplained tachycardia. Unexplained tachycardia in a volume overloaded patient.
All right.
Do a cardiac ultrasound. Look at the heart.
Right.
And you will find, you'll be surprised for pericardial effusion that's present there.
Right.
That, of course, does not show up on chest x-ray.
Nope.
And will not really show up in EKG.
Right.
And will not really show up in the troponins. And you're kind of flying blind, but you have to do an ultrasound.
Right. And again, cardiac tamponade in these patients, it's not going to present in that classical way sometimes. And the symptoms in the dialysis patient, it can be just altered mental status, hypotension, shortness of breath. Get that chest x-ray, like you said, Briggs, you know, do that ultrasound. One of the weird things too, sometimes if they're having hypotension during dialysis, sometimes that can be an indicator of a cardiac tamponade as well. And then pericarditis, usually that's secondary to uremia in dialysis patients. They have, you know, just fluid overload and abnormal platelet function. And one of the unique features here is that for uremic pericarditis, does not show typical EKG changes of acute pericarditis. Yeah. So you're not necessarily going to see the typical pericarditis, you know, ST elevations throughout. The inflammatory cells, they're not going to, you know, penetrate the myocardium. And then the treatment for uremic pericarditis is going to be essentially dialysis. This could be dialysis.
Now, obviously, these are patients that you're looking at the BUN level greater than 60. I know we ignore that BUN lab value a lot.
Oh, yeah.
At least I do. I mean, I see it elevated with the creatinine every now and then, and it helps me with, pre-renal or maybe it's a, you know, GI bleed or whatever, you know. Yeah. But like, in all seriousness, like how many times you look at that and you're like, okay, whatever, it's like 25. And I couldn't even tell you what half of the time it is on my patients, but in this case, this is really, really high. Greater than 60 is very elevated. Mm-hmm. So just don't ignore that and say, oh, it's just a dialysis patient. Think about the issue of having chest pain and it's a high BUN, then you got to be thinking about pericarditis, which is not completely uncommon. Hey, well, home stretch here. Let's get into the presentation of what our STEM actually was about, as our listeners are now wondering where they're going to learn about infection and surge criteria. I did a podcast a few weeks ago on sepsis, and some of the listeners commented that I was pretty salty in that episode. And I explained to them that it was very difficult to joyfully talk about the surge criteria in sepsis because of all the hospital innuendos now that are associated with sepsis. But let's get into the meat of what you need to know here and what our STEM was actually about. And remember that infection accounts for pretty much the second most common cause of dialysis deaths, up to like 35% or so of dialysis deaths. So tell us kind of more about that. Obviously, they're prone to infection for a variety of reasons. I think the most obvious one is, they go into a healthcare center where there are resistant infectious agents, and they are having a large bore needle hooked up to a fistula or vas cath that is indwelling into their body. And they get hooked up to a machine that automatically filters their blood for 4 hours as they sit there in a healthcare setting.
Hours a day.
yes, exactly. And their immune function also, when they have their blood circulating through a dialysis machine, that they all their little platelets get chopped up and immune modulators get chopped up. I wonder if there is a risk of them catching healthcare associated infections.
Right. And you know, the way you put it right there, it also
like a graphic novel.
Also understand what type of bacteria you're dealing with too, right?
Yeah, sure.
So honestly, if you have a dialysis patient that presents with fever or signs of sepsis, first check their dialysis access sites, check their catheter or fistula, or you know, for PD patients, the peritoneal dialysis site.
And that's a whole other topic, by the way.
That really is peritoneal. Yeah, PD dialysis infections.
You should subscribe to Rapid Bombs. We'll talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So when it comes to vascular access, you know, sites, those vascular access and infections, they're going to be the most common overall infection. Again, exit site infections, tunnel infections, bacteremia related to dialysis catheters, fistulas, or grafts. Bloodstream infections are the leading cause of hospitalization and death, can arise from these access sites and just frankly other sources, because again, they're exposed to so many of these in the healthcare setting. Then you have the usual culprits such as respiratory, viral. You know, don't forget your PD patients with peritonitis. We talked about that, in one of our rapid bombs recently. Do a broad infectious workup, get blood cultures, chest x-ray, and urine studies if they still produce urine. So let's talk about bacteremia and the types of bacteria that affect dialysis patients. Hey, this is my favorite part. This is honestly my favorite. This is so easy. This is so ridiculously easy.
Yes.
What is the number one bacteria that affects dialysis patients after that novel and just the poetic way you waxed on, what they're exposed to?
I was going to try to be funny and think of the most rare bacteria possible, but for the interest of time, it's going to be Staphylococcus aureus.
Yes, it really is. The Staph aureus. Up to 50% of the time. We're not talking about like 10 to 20%, maybe. No, up to 50% of the time, it's Staph aureus. And obviously, just MSRA.
Silent culprit here.
It really.
Just Staph over here is silently just killing along. Just.
I know, right? I mean, it's just so obvious.
Oh, is it me you were looking for again?
Is that Adele? This would be a Adele song right there for like Staph, right?
It's me again.
Hey, so MRSA, obviously, think about that as well, right? So that's why, what is the dialysis patient's best friend?
It's vancomycin.
Vancomycin.
The best part is you're more wondering if it's renotoxic. Well, does that really matter?
I mean, there's just something about that where it's like vancomycin is their best friend. It is, going to mess up kidneys, but guess what? It doesn't matter anymore.
Kind of like giving Toradol too.
I know, right?
Sorry, we're not sponsored by Toradol.
We are.
Hey, the other antibiotic you have to add though to cover, gram negatives though, your options are going to be usually a third gen cephalosporin, like ceftriaxone or ceftazidime. That's fine. Very rarely, if they can't tolerate that or something weird is going on or allergy, you're going to have to reach for like an aminoglycoside like gentamicin. Then every pharmacist in the world will curse your name that you ordered gentamicin on somebody. No, so don't do that, but try to stick with the third gen cephalosporin like ceftriaxone for these patients for the beauty empiric coverage.
That's pretty much it.
That's it.
Like, it's really just Vinc doing like a third generation cephalosporin.
Yeah.
And much of it is just recognition as to what's going to happen. Hey, let's just like summarize this very quickly.
Oh, I can do it. Two sentences.
Yeah, please.
Number one, cardiovascular death kills a lot of dialysis patients. Don't forget about that. Number two, infection kills the second most amount of dialysis patients. Mm. And whenever you see unexplained fever, unexplained tachycardia, or just in general, in not well appearing dialysis patient, order IV Vinc and ceftriaxone and admit them to the hospital.
Yeah, it's quite straightforward. It really is. It really is. And
don't be a cowboy here.
Don't cowboy it, you know.
No cowboys.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, that's it. So go check out EM Rapid Bombs, obviously, emboardbombs.com. You can click the link. The best part about EM Rapid Bombs is you can pay on the website, like straight up, sign up at our website, and you're rock and rolling right away. There's nothing else you have to worry about in terms of sign up. It's a great holiday gift, too, if you think about it. New year coming around the corner. New year, new you.
Mm.
New Rapid Bombs.
While you work out and starting that new workout regimen, just listen to us. Yeah. It'd be great.
Big brain.
Soothing voices.
Small body.
Hey, can we do a short? Let's do a short.
Sure.
All right.
Lead us in. You got it. Do your face. Look at the camera again. Do that thing.
Hey. Dialysis patients. Number one leading cause of death.
Number one.
Cardiovascular.
Got it.
Got it? So take the troponin seriously. Take their chest pain seriously. Don't just ignore them. And don't think it's always demand related.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Lead me in, Briggs. Number two. Thank you. Number two. Infection.
You had to point at the camera.
Infection.
That's the social desert. They like kind of lean back and they like aim the camera and they.
Do this?
Do that. You have to do this too. You like point and grab. It's all the. How...
And number two. And number two.
That's it. Slay queen.
And number two. This is so ridiculous. And number two, cause of death in dialysis patient is infection. Up to 50% of the time coming from Staph aureus. Remember MSRA coverage. Give them Vinc and a third generation cephalosporin. Admit them to the hospital and you're done.
That's it. Write your note. Build critical care.
Boom.